Welcome to the Defiant Film Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel, and today we're diving into the 1988 cult classic, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. If you like deep dives into 60s to 90s cult, horror, and thriller films, look no further because there's some crazy shit that happens behind the scenes. So, why Killer Clowns? Well, it was created by three brothers who are actually special effects artists, and these siblings, Stephen, Edward, and Charles Chiodo, used their special effects knowledge to create this really ultimate B-list horror comedy, sci-fi. It's a fusion of genres. And personally, my first experience watching Killer Clowns was in a horror movie camp I attended when I was 11 or 12. There was this art center near my childhood home in Atlanta called Sproul, and it was this incredible place. I probably attended six or seven different art-related camps there in my youth, but I was in this one particular camp that was a horror movie class, and it was with two long-haired 30-something special effects dudes, and let me tell you, they cultured the shit out of us. Like seriously, that was the first time I saw this shower scene from Psycho. It was the first time I saw Monster Squad, Night of the Living Dead, and most importantly, for this episode, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. So shout out to Sproul Art Center for culturing me, because that's probably why I'm pursuing a master's in film. I just remember being completely infatuated with the sets, the clown masks, the whole concept of space clowns. It's just it was so original to me and is so entertaining, and that was my first time seeing that kind of film. And the brothers are known far more than just for space clowns, let me tell you, though. In fact, I'm sure most of you listening have actually seen their work before, even if you haven't seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And if you haven't seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space, why are you listening to this episode? Watch that first and come back. If not, there's going to be spoilers, you know? Okay. Are you gone now? Cool. All right. Let's continue. So the Chiodos are responsible for a lot of gems. Actually, they crafted the model mice for, Dinner for Schmucks, the 2010 Steve Carell, Paul Rudd comedy, which I wouldn't dare watch now, but it was pretty funny as a kid. And they were also responsible for making the critters in the 1986 film Critters, as well as the effects for Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Team America World Police, believe it or not. That's a classic. And they also did the stop motion for Elf, the Will Ferrell movie, which is, I feel like, one of the better Christmas movies out there. So although initially hearing the name Chiodo Brothers might not immediately ring a bell, these guys are ballers in the special effects industry. And I think that's what makes Killer Clowns extra intriguing. Not just that it was made by special effects guys, and not just that it was made by a trio of brothers, but also just the title and the concept and the fact that there's these evil clowns trying to kill people, but they're also from outer space. And let me move on to some background now before I get too sidetracked, but I want to talk about the brothers a bit. So from a young age, Stephen, Edward, and Charles loved the movies. They grew up in the Bronx, so when you hear some interview clips, you'll definitely hear that city accent. And there's also some notable parallels between Sam Raimi and the Chiodo brothers. One of those is being that from a young age, they were making films on their own. The Chiodos used an 8mm camera to make stop action pictures, and they were probably 7 or 8 when they started, maybe even younger. And actually, if you want to see their early movies, they're still on YouTube, on the Chiodos YouTube channel. So check those out if you're interested in seeing what they came up with as kids. So before I go any further, I wanted to mention how interesting these brothers are in interviews. Of course, I'll share some clips as well, but I wanted to kind of give a visual because they all look and act different. Steven is the thin, lanky brother, and he's kind of the backbone because he directed the film. And Edward is the youngest brother, and he's a little rounder with glasses, but he also seems like a sweetheart. And Charles See, like, Charles is just a muscular cutie. Like, in the interviews, he seems like a sweetheart as well, but, like, he's also charismatic, and I'm not trying to pick favorites, but Charles can get my number. And you'll hear later on from the star Grant Kramer that the brothers, they fought like hell during filming, but apparently that's how they got their work done, and, I mean, I think it had a pretty great result, so there's that. After graduating high school, the brothers went off to college, trying to pursue their dreams to work in the movies. And after getting degrees, they all eventually congregated in LA, and their work kind of just took off from there. I don't know exactly how they got the big break, but how I see it, they were a force to be reckoned with. I mean, you don't just have one special effects guy coming, and you have three of them, all brothers, and they all know how to work together, and they're all knowledgeable and hard workers. And it seems like often they kind of did come as a package deal. And I think that's really appealing for special effects artists, because it just means more productivity and better quality. And Steven and Charles were primarily sculptors, while Ed handled the mechanics. And at this point, you're probably wondering what made the Chiodos want to create a film of their own. And, so it all kind of started when Steven tried to think of the scariest concept he could think of, which Charles describes in this 2002 interview called The Making of Killer Clowns on YouTube. So just give this a listen.
I mean, it was a labor of love for us, because even before we got into production, we'd been thinking about this idea for many years. Mm. You know, started just conversations about, you know, what's the scariest thing you could think of driving along a dark road. And it was if you looked next to you and saw a clown peering at you from another car.
And the brothers wanted to start the movie with this driving scene they had envisioned, but later on they had to scrap that opening since it didn't really give the big oomph that the audience needed. But the concept of clowns also appealed to the brothers, since Steven absolutely hated clowns and he wanted to expose the blind trust of popular iconic images, which I think is really intriguing. And Steven had an interesting quote about this as well, which I'll read. And he said that throughout my childhood, clowns like Bozo, Ronald McDonald, and Clarabelle were portrayed as friendly personalities. These characters would perform slapstick antics for laughs and make positive social statements like, "It's nice to be important, but more important to be nice." They seem to fill a need in society to entertain, teach, and sell products to children. Some find joy and laughter in their antics. I do not. The white painted faces disguises the reality of what lies behind the makeup. The eyes reveal the true character, which may not always be in sync with the smiling painted face of the performer. I believe a child can sense this disassociation between the interior and exterior of the clown. And I don't think I'm the only one that feels that way. So I think that's just, I don't know. I really like what Steven has to say. He's a smart dude. And the brothers wanted to incorporate characters in the film as well that were based on people they actually knew growing up. Sorry, guys. I have two part-time jobs now, so it's been a week. But anyway, growing up, like our star Mike Tobacco, for example, and the Terenzi brothers and Joe Lombardo, all these characters were based on characters that Chiodo's brothers grew up with and were in high school with. And Mike Tobacco's character was actually known, well, the real, you know, Mike Tobacco was known for bringing girls to makeout points with champagne and a blow up raft in the back of his car, and just like for the movie, like just like in the movie at the beginning. And the Terenzi brothers really did rent out an ice cream truck with the hopes of getting laid. There's kind of like that aspect, which I think brings the characters to life a little more.
And there's also, well, the brothers attempted to do this kind of role reversal with Mike and Debbie. Like they wanted Mike to come across as kind of the dumb blonde who doesn't realize the horror of what's happening, while Debbie is more skeptical and catches on quicker to what's going on. But personally, I still think the roles are standard for a horror film. I mean, Debbie gets captured and must be in the position of a damsel in distress, while Mike and Dave get to play heroes. So that's just my thoughts on it. So let's move on to the actors, because I need to tell y'all about Grant Kramer, who plays our melodramatic star, Mike Tobacco, and Suzanne Snyder, who plays Debbie Stone. So first off, Suzanne Snyder is absolutely stunning, and she's aged like top quality kimchi. I was surprised to learn that she was in a lot of other 80s movies during the time as well. Like she was in Weird Science, Femme Fatale, Return of the Living Dead, Retribution, and my personal favorite, Night of the Creeps. And Snyder and Kramer are still good friends to this day, actually. And they both still are close with the Chiodos. And like I mentioned in the Evil Dead episode, the crew had a lasting relationships and lasting bonds, which I think is interesting. And that's an aspect that seems to come out of a lot of cult movies, and it warms my cold heart. And I want to show this clip of where Suzanne and Grant talk about just like how they bonded and why they bonded, because it's adorable.
And then Susie and I spent like a lot of time, you know, hanging out in cars. It was always like drizzling. So if you're shooting when you're drizzling, you're always like waiting for it to stop, and then they wipe the windows off real quick. And so we were just kind of hanging out, and that's how we got to know each other, and we're still great friends now, because we were sitting in the car for half the movie, talking and telling stories, like just waiting for them to say, okay, it's clear for a few minutes, let's go shoot this.
Yeah.
They are precious, and Suzanne has just the nicest, like, just nicest voice. And Grant Kramer's story is intriguing because he was an econ major at UCLA while doing acting auditions, and he finally got a role in a film called New Year's Evil. And in 1984, he starred in Hard Bodies, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. And then he was just doing soap operas right before he got the role in Killer Clowns. And the funny thing is Kramer actually admitted in a 2020 interview from the Film School Archive channel on YouTube that he's a wimp when it comes to horror. Yet he also mentions Sam Raimi as one of his favorite directors. So just listen here real quick.
In terms of horror, I've never really been a huge fan of slice 'em and dice 'em, like, you know, the kind of torture porn bloody stuff. I mean, of course, I saw all of the you know, the Friday the 13th and everything, because you would just go, like, you know what I mean? It would be Friday night and everybody would go, oh, the new Friday the 13th. But I always kind of cringed every time that arrow would come up through the bunk bed or something. But I loved all the really, you know, the spooky, scary kind of omen, Exorcist, you know, that was more my vibe stuff. And then I've always loved, I always loved the kind of weird, you know, Sam Raimi, Toxic Avenger. Cause I never really thought any of that stuff was really scary. I just thought it was freaking weird and cool. You know what I mean? And I loved kind of comic booky, weird, cool stuff. And when I read the script of Killer Clowns, I just went, like, this is just weird, you know, and I liked it because it was so completely unique. And I never, Killer Clowns to me has scary moments and people are scared of clowns, but it's not really a scary movie. I mean, I don't even know what you'd categorize it as. It's like horror, sci-fi, somewhat comedy, right? I mean, it's its own unique brand.
So when he read the Killer Clowns script, Grant had actually been offered, sorry, I interchangeably am saying Grant and Kramer. I'll just know Grant Kramer. But Grant had already been offered a role in an action film, but it would be filmed in South Africa during the apartheid, and he didn't want to star in a film that would support an apartheid state because it wasn't just morally right in his opinion, which good for him. I think he's right with that. And I think that shows he's a good human. And in the interview, I think he just seems like a down-to-earth friendly dude. Like everyone, when researching this film, everyone in it just seems like someone I'd like to, you know, get coffee with. And speaking of down to earth, so are the Chiodos, because they cast Kramer a few months before production started. And in the meantime, they invited him and other cast members to see kind of the sets they were creating and the special effects. And they showed them the clown masks as well. So I think that's great. And shows that these are people you definitely want to work with. Like I want to make stuff with them. And before discussing the filming process, I wanted to share another clip of the interview with Snyder and Kramer, because I mentioned that Kramer got the role, but I didn't talk about the audition process, which was very unique. So I'll let them describe it here for you guys.
My agent read the script and said, "You have got to go in on this audition." She spoke about the Chiodo brothers. She said they're like the next Rick Baker, way beyond. They're so talented. And she said, and this movie's going to be a cult classic. It already is, and it hasn't even been made. And I said, okay. And I had just been working on something else also. And, you know, they mixed and matched all these different people together till they found the right combination.
Yeah, that's how the audition process was. It was literally like, I'd say no less than like five times or more that we had to go in.
Yeah.
And there would be like 20 of us in there. And they would just keep on moving us in different combinations. Yeah. And eventually Suzanne and I started to feel like we seem to be the common denominator. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there was different people every time, but we were always there.
We were always there.
So they kind of thought that the reason the Chiodos did this, the interview process this way, is probably just because they wanted to see which actors had the best chemistry, which I think is, I don't know. I feel like that's a very, once more, a very down-to-earth process. Like, it's not conventional, but then again, three special effects guys making a movie is not conventional either. So let's move on to the filming process, because the entire film was shot in 36 days, which, as you're probably thinking, is insanely rushed. And it was almost entirely shot at night as well. So the cast had to be temporarily nocturnal. They had some drawbacks while shooting as well, which I'll get into in a bit. But it was their first film, so there's always going to be things that go terribly wrong. Like, think back to Sam Raimi and The Evil Dead. Like, there's often barriers these young amateur filmmakers come across, and that's just part of the deal. Luckily, the Chiodos had friends in the industry, and a lot of them came in clutch and helped the boys out when they needed favors. They really wanted to make a film that had both elements of horror and humor. We as the audience are familiar with clowns, and it might be funny at first to see these killer clowns walking around, until they turn you into a cotton candy cocoon and suck your blood out through a straw. So it's just kind of this intertwining of, once more, comedy, horror, sci-fi, a little bit of thriller. Like, I'll get into the inspirations as well, so you'll see where they got a lot of these concepts from. And also, in an interview, Steven said he wanted to generate suspense and surprise by contrasting fast and slow movements. And this is why the clowns seem to be walking in slow motion a lot of the time, because they slow-mo'd the footage. And Steven said that he wanted to give their walk this like eerie underwater quality, as if, and I quote, "the gravity on Earth was greater than on their home planet." So the weird, uncanny walk that the clowns do is completely deliberate to make audiences uncomfortable. And then they break the pace with just a burst of action. And another cool thing is, remember the clown's weakness? If you forgot, let me remind you that once you shoot a killer clown's big red nose, they die. And in 2011, Edward revealed that the red nose weakness is basically the clown's Achilles heel. And Believe it or not, the weakness was inspired by tropes in zombie cinema, like with the headshot or through dismemberment, or as Edward put it frankly, shoot nose, kill clown, shoot brains, kill zombie. I should also mention they shot the film in Santa Cruz, just south of San Francisco, and they designed the sets to look almost like an alternate universe that's already filled with circus imagery. Like, think about the burger joint with the clown themes and the clown ice cream truck that the Terenzi brothers drive. Like, the brothers really wanted to emulate kind of this clown universe. So moving on, and this is a juicy part. I get excited about this part, but there's a little drama that took place between Grant Kramer and John Allen Nelson, who plays Deputy Dave, you know, the blonde pretty boy cop. And Kramer is actually a blonde as well, but the Chiodos didn't want two blondes, especially since Suzanne Snyder is also a blonde. So they made Kramer dye his hair brown, and he wasn't too thrilled about it. But that's all a side note. But let Grant Kramer describe what happened with the drama between him and Deputy Dave.
To be honest with you, I didn't really get along with him very well. I never like to say anything, you know, bad about anybody. But he was kind of one of those people that I think he actually took. You know, there's a bit of a love triangle, right? I'm the new boyfriend, and he's the old boyfriend, and yeah. He's a little bit older than me, and right. He kind of acted like that the whole film. like it would be so nice if you weren't here, right? No, seriously, I'll tell you a true story. This is literally like the second day we've
so
all met
about
each
this.
Other, and we're going to all go see a movie. Like, we've had a little rehearsal, and we're in the parking lot of the hotel in Santa Cruz, and we're going to see a movie. So, like, hop in the car. We're going to meet out in the parking lot at 4:30. And I, like, I'm walking toward the car, and everybody's in it, and he's like, Grant, come on! And I was like, oh, shit, I forgot my jacket. Hold on one second. He goes, no, we're not waiting for you. And he put his foot on the thing and burned rubber out of the parking lot. And I thought,
awful.
Of course, like, normally you'd think, like, all of a sudden somebody's going to slam on the brakes. They're going to rewind and go, ha, 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 got you. Nope. I didn't see a movie that day.
And I couldn't get
it.
I was like, what?
I was like, ooh. I just visualized that whole thing, and it makes me so happy. but I'm personally team Mike Tobacco all the way. I think Deputy Dave had his chance and whatever. But besides that, there was no drama that took place on set, and that was pretty minor anyway. As I did mention earlier, Kramer and also Snyder said that the Chiodos would fight all the time on set, and it could get really chaotic, but that's just how they got their work done. Keep in mind, they've been making movies together since they were kids, so the way they interacted wasn't going to change, especially with the added stress of making a damn movie. And before I discuss some dope-ass special effects techniques they use, I wanted to mention that the brothers had to change their ending for theatrical release. Originally, the Chiodos wanted the huge explosion at the end to result in Deputy Dave dying, but the test audience and executive producers didn't like that Dave died, to which I say cry me a river, but they changed it and Dave survived. Bummer, in my opinion. I think it makes more sense to have Dave die and get a statue or something in his honor instead of continuing the endless love triangle. But please, actually, y'all, tell me what you think about the ending and whether you think Dave dying would be a cool finale or if you think the ending was perfectly fine as it played out. Feel free to comment on the Killer Clowns Instagram post I'll make and send me a message on my website if you feel like it. And now let's move on to the special effects, because the special effects in this film were really just perfected by the Chiodos, obviously, because special effects like geniuses. So they grew up with Dr. Seuss, too, and that inspired a lot of their sets, actually, with this uncanny, strange, otherworldly universe, and the sets had these twisted shapes and hypnotic designs that I think are definitely similar to symbolism in Dr. Seuss and kind of the universe in there. But moving on, you know how the brothers spoke earlier on how they wanted a scene with a clown on a bike? So that scene was actual hell to pull off. Like something kept fucking up. Listen to the brothers discuss it here. It's interesting.
We were on a very tight schedule. We had to shoot the film in 36 days. We were not going to get any more days to shoot this movie. So in order, the only way to shoot it again was to open up time in the schedule. And so Steven just got his plan where he just started accelerating other scenes to buy us time, another half a night, to get to shoot the clown car again.
And then the second time we shot it, they chose this little park area where the road was so rocky and so bumpy that all the shots were jumbling up and down. Another unusable day's worth of shooting.
But the lighting was okay.
Yeah, the lighting was better. So now you can see how shaky the camera was.
So we had two badly shot nights of the sequence there. And the executive producer, the director, Edward, they said, forget this. It doesn't work. Let's get rid of it. Throw it out. And I went in there and I saw it. I said, no, this is the whole conception. This is the initial concept of the whole freaking film. You know, there's got to be something here we can use. So I go in there. I went with the editor. I sat down with him. I said, you know, let's make this thing work. And I said, this shot is good. This shot is good. That's good. This car, this close-up. And I took everything that wasn't crappy. And then I made a montage. I put together with Chris Roth, I put together a sequence. It's an abbreviated sequence from the original plan, but at least it's in there.
The whole sequence was a real nightmare because we can talk about the car, the live car, going off the cliff. That was a whole other fiasco.
Well, it was supposed to go flying off the cliff, and we have the behind-the-scenes footage there. Everyone's yelling, get back! All right, get out of there! Run! Get away!
100 yards away. You had to go back farther, because they didn't want this car to be careening onto the crowd, on top of the crew.
And kill us all. The car went,
like a runny nose. It just dribbled over the cliff.
You see it in the film. It's kind of unimpressive.
Uneventful. And what happened in the end, I think, to stop the car from rolling down the hill it was on, they put a sandbag underneath the front wheel. And they neglected to take the sandbag away when they had the cable pull the car. So the cable snapped immediately. So the car just kind of rolled down the hill via gravity.
Actually, if it weren't for the hill, it wouldn't have gone anywhere, which... Yeah.
Which would have been better.
We would have gotten a second take, maybe.
It's just one of those crazy things that happens in production, and we laugh about it now.
At this point, if you're not laughing at the Chiodos, I don't know what's wrong with you, because they're incredible. Like, just hearing the interviews all over again, I think they're so interesting, and the way they tell stories is fantastic. And of course, I want to discuss the drawbacks in these films, because I think it's way more interesting than hearing about, like, a Michael Bay movie being made. Like, any of those issues matter when you have a $100 million budget, you know. But there's a lot in the special effects department that almost, like, you know, that over-delivered and excelled in execution because these three special effects brothers were the ones creating it. It was their rules, except for, you know, stuff with the producers, but I'll get into that. But with the special effects, like, the ways they went over the top was, like, the popcorn guns they had were made with a compressor that fired real popcorn, which is awesome, but it also cost $7,000 and took 6 weeks to build. And they definitely just spent way more time preparing the special effects than they did actually filming the movie. The clown masks they used were also mechanically controlled so that the facial expression could be changed. And they made 4 generic head types for these clowns that were reproduced and then given to extras. And one was round, one was triangular, one was an inverted triangle, and one was peanut shaped, which is, I want to talk to, like, who came up with those shapes, and I want to know why. And also, the shower scene with Debbie was directly inspired by Psycho, and Steven is quoted saying that we wanted to do to the toilet what Alfred Hitchcock did to the shower. And despite the clowns being terrifying, they're also kind of portrayed as awkward and deformed, and they have these balloon-like bulging bellies. And in the interview with Kramer and Snyder, they were asked who their favorite clown was. And of course, they said Shorty, because that's the only correct answer. Shorty is the, quite literally, like, short clown that I'd argue is the cutest of the bunch. He's the one who punches the biker's head off when he, like, messes up Shorty's bike. And to me, watching the film, I was cheering Shorty on the whole time. And Snyder said Snyder actually said the same thing about that. And how can you not love that adorable, like, murderous green hair fluffed munchkin clown? Like, he's just the best, period. Don't argue with me. Like, just I'll post some of the Shorty pictures on Instagram as well to show my bias. So there's that. And overall, the brothers just went ham on using as many special effects techniques as possible. They used puppetry, stop motion, shadowography, and a bunch of other words I don't know. Sorry. And the best part is the best part is the actors would assist with the special effects during production. Like, the cast would be throwing pies from offstage, and they're, like, just handing stuff to the crew members and just assisting. They seem to have a lot of fun with it as well. So that's another reason I think that they're all close to this day, because they just are building the sense of community, and they're all heavily involved in the film. So let's move on to some movie inspirations. Killer Clowns was inspired by a variety of classic sci-fi movies, like the cotton candy cocoons echoed the cocoons from the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They were inspired by The Blob, with the theme of these kids trying to convince the authorities that there's monsters roaming around, but they're not believed. And in addition, the spaceship's central power room was directly inspired by a scene in Forbidden Planet. So I'll let the brothers discuss it a little further here.
Well, I believe you know, that's what a lot of filmmakers do. There's certain things that they grew up watching, motion pictures and television, that stuck with them. And I would say it's an homage, you know, we're basically bringing it back with just a slight little twist. You know, the Ray Harryhausen, Willis O'Brien, you know, scenes. There was, you know.
Well, somebody had asked me if the cocoons were reminiscent of the pods in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, pulling the cotton candy away and seeing that face underneath it.
Well, yeah.
I don't remember specifically being that reference, but. You know, I love that film.
It must have been consciously. I don't think we did it, but it's imagery certainly ingrained in our vocabulary.
So I think it's interesting too to note how Steven says, like, I don't like remember thinking of the cotton candy cocoons as a reference to Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but it's just, you know, we take on these anything you love, really, you kind of take it on and carry it with you throughout your life, especially things that had an impact on you as a child. And so the brothers loved horror, but they were definitely heavily influenced by a variety of sci-fi. And they also they definitely wanted to have comedy in there, just because I think in the interviews you see they have such a big sense of humor, almost like Sam Raimi. Like, they have to incorporate humor in their work. It's just how they do things. And also, this is great. So Clownzilla, you know, he's the final clown boss, what have you. He was actually played by Charles. And the reason he looks so big, they just used tricks and perspective to make him appear huge when he was actually just real person proportions. And yes, Clownzilla was a direct reference to Godzilla because the Chiodos love that film. So in terms of reception, Killer Clowns unfortunately didn't appeal to major studios. Many of them just didn't get the concept or just understand this film that they had created. And as a result, they couldn't sell it to any major studios. But I think it paid off long term. And it did eventually get its rights to 20th Century Fox, which I'll talk about in a second. And but first, I found this 1988 review of the film in Variety magazine, and my man Carl had an interesting take, and by that I mean he was savage. As I quote, A tiny opening day matinee audience on Hollywood Boulevard appeared to consist almost entirely of people who worked on the film, which sums up its box office potential. And also said, except for the juicy expressions of nastiness and contempt from cynical cop John Vernon, the performances are strictly amateur night. The film is seemingly interminable. Sorry. That word. Every time I saw that word on the script, I was like, oh no, I'm gonna mess that one up. But although Carl is pretty harsh in his review, I can't completely disagree with him. The acting performances are kind of mediocre and there's some questionable editing, but at the same time, it doesn't drag on or lose its magic throughout. Although the film didn't shatter the box office, it still grossed over $15 million domestically with a $1.8 million budget. So although there are tiny matinee audiences made up of mostly cast and crew, the movie did well, and over time it gained a lot of more hype and admiration. So yeah, Carl, I bet you didn't see that coming. And keep in mind that Killer Clowns is a true cult film in that it didn't impress audiences initially, but over time it's just become more and more popular. Nowadays, Killer Clowns is usually in the top 10 list of the best 80s cult films. And they have a rabid fan base, and a lot of them cosplay, and there's conventions where it's featured. And I actually participated in this as well, because last Halloween I dressed up as a killer clown, and I even made a cotton candy gun out of a painted white claw. But unfortunately, everyone thought I was Harley Quinn, so I failed on my attempt. And you might be wondering, was there ever a sequel in the works for Killer Clowns? Well, the answer to that is they've been trying for decades to make one, but it's never worked. They have a sequel plan that was supposed to be released in 2012, but that never happened. And in 2016, they announced a TV series for the film, but that never happened either. The brothers face both legal and financial barriers in the process. And the biggest factor is that the rights for Killer Clowns, as I mentioned earlier, is owned by 20th Century Fox, a.k.a. what is now Disney, which is already taking over the world and limiting distribution in a lot of ways. So a sequel might never happen. Like, Sci-Fi even announced they were doing a sequel in 2018, but it's not really possible without getting those ownership rights back from 20th Century Fox. So sad times. But on a more positive note, let's discuss a few fun facts. So Charles has said before that, quote, we give our characters a life that you might not get someplace else. That's our Frankenstein complex. We're bringing things to life. And I think they excel in doing so. I mean, if you check out the brothers' website, their official title is, and no, I'm not joking, Legendary Stop Motion Animation and Creature Effects Wizards. So... Although Stephen, Charles, and Edward have different roles, they're all equally badass. And something interesting about Stephen in particular is he has worked with Francis Ford Coppola, Sam Raimi, and even the creators of South Park, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. So the Chiodos do have these very impressive careers, and that's one of the reasons I chose this film, because more than likely you'd seen the brothers work before and never knew it was them or never made that connection. And the best part of all is they get to do exactly what they love doing as kids, and of course they're still making stuff today, so it's worked out really well for them. And one more thing before I move on. So the Dickies, who wrote and performed the original score for Killer Clowns, wrote the score based on their gut reaction from the movie title alone. They hadn't seen any cuts of the movie in advance. They didn't read the script. They just used the movie title and rolled with it. And I think they did an awesome job. And sorry, I can't include the song on here. I don't want to get copyright striked for that. Now, this is usually the section of the podcast that's dedicated to creepy coincidences that happen on set. But with this movie, there was really nothing weird or supernatural going on. So I thought it'd be fun to briefly explore clowns throughout film history and how they've evolved to become what they are today. So, of course, clowns originated from the circus, which splits into three separate categories: artists, freaks, and clowns. And clowns in the 1910s to the 1920s were seen as ill-fated, sad and emotional, and they weren't seen as the scary entity they are today. And in the 1940s and 50s, however, clowns started making more of an appearance, but probably not in the way you're thinking. See, these clowns are primarily shown in detective and thriller films as a way for the real perpetrator to conceal their identity. Like, the clown itself at this time is not seen as evil, but more so an evil person would dress up as a clown just to conceal their identity. So in the 40s and 50s, they were just used as a way to disguise evil actions. But throughout the 1950s and the early 60s, there's a shift in culture since the popularity of circuses was vastly declining, which coincided with the upcoming first stages of the space age. So with space rockets and all that shit becoming more popular, we see more science fiction movies. And the circus was just kind of pushed to the corner as a dying concept. And so 1980s and beyond, the clown trope became almost exclusive to the horror genre. And I think that still applies to this day. Think of It, both from the 80s and now. There's The Terrifier. There's 31 by Rob Zombie. The list goes on. I could list so many more. And I think this movie trend with clowns as killers will probably continue for a decade or two until clowns just potentially die out or have some second wave of popularity. You never know. Like, think back to 2016, 2015, when clowns were roaming around the streets. Like, you never know what's going to happen. this world is crazy. So before I stop blabbing, shout out to my mom for listening to this episode, because she's deathly afraid of clowns. And I know it might have been hard for her to get through this. So thanks, Renee. You're a trooper. With all the research I put into these episodes, and as someone with two part-time jobs and a degree to finish, I realized that a weekly episode is an unrealistic schedule, unless this was my full-time job. So in order to keep quality up and my insanity low, I'm going to do a rough bi-weekly schedule from now on. So tune in next time, because I'm taking a break from the 80s to focus on what is debatedly one of the sexiest cult films of the 1960s. And of course, as always, if you'd like to send me questions, comments, or requests for episodes, reach out. Everything is at Defiant Film Podcast. And I'm most active on Instagram, so follow me on there to see photos from each episode. And I hope you guys have noticed that the audio is a bit improved from last time. And I've been trying to just like work on that, and shout out to my friends who have helped me in doing so. And I hope you guys enjoyed talking about Killer Clowns and the Chiodos this week. And remember, a remake could be possible in our lifetimes, like maybe 10% chance. Be defiant, but not uncultured. That's why I'm here. I'll be back next time with a seductive space movie. So stay tuned.